The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. At times, over the air or on podcasts, I make predictions. Not because I view myself as a prophet, and not because I believe I am predicting anything which others would not also guess. Any thinking person following the news could make the exact same predictions. And of course, I'm not the only one making them anyway. But when I make them, and when they come true, I do like to point out the fulfillments, not to boast, but to show that our society is headed down the same road that civilizations of the past headed down before they lost their freedoms. Freedoms which first eroded due to subtle brainwashing, and then continued to morph into redefinitions of what it means to be law-abiding, which leads to anarchy. That, my friends, is the stage we're in right now. Not everywhere. It depends on the state. It depends on the city. But there's certainly an overlap, a changing of the guard going on, if you will, on where we are as a culture regarding downright anarchy. And of course, no country can survive perpetual anarchy. Eventually, the anarchy is taken over by a strict military police dictatorship. Those who ignore the lessons of history and how history repeats itself, and those who ignore what the Bible says about human nature, the patterns of history, the predictability of human nature, those are interesting combos which really will tell you the future. It really will. Human beings and their uncanny abilities to be deceived from without and self-deceived from within with an incredible talent to rationalize our own actions, not take responsibility for our own actions, believing what we want to believe. Those who ignore these foundational primaries to assessing a society are taken by surprise when their freedoms slowly disappear. And so I make predictions because their fulfillments spotlight where we are as a nation and verify that we should start paying better attention. Anyway, in addition to my broadcast show on The Answer and on K-Praise, and in addition to my daily Bob Siegel Show podcast, I am also one of four rotating co-hosts on another podcast for the CGM Radio Network called World News Brief. Shortly after the shooting and deaths of three children and three staff at a Christian private school in Nashville, Tennessee, I first commented on all of the expected reaction of the liberal media call to gun control. That probably didn't surprise anybody, but I also made mention early on about the shooter being transgender. It was coming out in the news. It wasn't being emphasized. Let me take a few minutes and replay some of the points I made, some of the predictions I made. Obvious predictions? Of course they were. Easy predictions? Of course they were. I'm going to play them for you anyway. This, which follows, is from a couple of weeks ago on World News Brief, a recording, an excerpt. After listening, we will return to today's current Bob Siegel Show. Meanwhile, for the longest time, we were hearing very little about the identity of this assassin, and that is because the identity does not fit the mainstream narrative of our self-righteous pundits. They expect shooters to be white and male, or conservative, or Republican, or Trump supporters, or pro-life people. Those are the ones they salivate to talk about. Not women. Not even women who identify as being a man. Okay, now look. As far as I'm concerned, a killer is a killer. I don't care about the race. I don't care about the color. I don't care about the gender. I don't care about the gender preference. I don't care about the gender transition. If they kill, they kill. It doesn't mean I'm assuming that all transgenders are dangerous the way the left will immediately assume. If one pro-life person gets violent or tries to blow up an abortion clinic, they'll assume that all pro-life people are like that. And we hear that. This just verifies what we've always known about those dangerous pro-life people or dangerous conservatives or dangerous Trump supporters, whatever the case happens to be. If one or two people are violent, they'll paint with a thick brush and make everybody dangerous. I don't do that. I only bring it up to show how the media does not know how to handle somebody that does not fit their narrative. Transgenders are supposed to be viewed as victims. The idea of a transgender victimizing anybody else, they can't even conceive of that. They don't want you to conceive of that. And so they will try to find a way to explain it. Just watch. By the time this is over, there will be sympathy for the shooter. Already, NBC News is talking about resentment on the part of this 28-year-old former student of the school. And we're being reminded that up to now, there has been no police record. They will spin like Rumpelstiltskin. They will spin because you are not allowed to think of transgenders as violent. Well, my friends, I do not think of transgenders as violent. I don't think of anybody as violent until they commit violence. The excerpt you just heard was from World News Brief, March 28, 2023. And of course, that turned out to be the understated prediction of the year. Let me share some of the news reports that followed. Fox News. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Thursday that the trans community in America is under attack just days after a transgender former student opened fire in a Nashville, Tennessee school and killed six people. That was Fox. That was a straightforward retelling of what the press secretary said. But you just gotta love the New York Times. At first, they referred to the suspect as a female assailant. This was quickly remedied by their official Twitter account saying, "There was confusion later on Monday about the gender identity of the assailant in the Nashville shooting. Officials had used she and her to refer to the suspect who, according to a social media post and a linked profile, appeared to identify as a man in recent months." Glad we got that one cleared up, New York Times. The correct pronouns associated with the shooter are so important. And take a gander at this next one from America's News Now. The leader of a transgender youth education organization drew strong reaction on social media Tuesday for claiming religious schools need to be regulated following the mass shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville. Eli Ehrlich, a transgender activist and co-founder of Trans Student Educational Resources, shared the calls on Twitter Tuesday. While pointing to a blog authored by a former pastor, Ehrlich claimed that the Covenant School is a right-wing institution in which shooting suspect Audrey Hale and other students were previously abused. "Obviously, this isn't an excuse to attack it," Ehrlich tweeted. Oh, well, thank you for saying that at least, Ehrlich. He goes on, "But there are problems with deregulating religious schools and the U.S.'s lack of mental health care. In other words, this wasn't an excuse for an attack, but I will take this time to condemn them, even though six people from that school are dead, three of them children. Have we no conscience left in our country? Have we no shame left in our country? This is the way we respond to cold-blooded murder." And here's one from Yahoo. Dozens of protesters swarmed into the Tennessee state capitol on Thursday, demanding that the lawmakers take action on gun violence as they appeared to mourn the loss of the transgender former student who shot and killed six people at a private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee, earlier this week. While several people held up six fingers, video from the demonstration showed multiple protesters holding up seven fingers at one point in an apparent display of how many lives were lost in the shooting that took place. Every death is a tragedy, y'all. Seven lives, one protester could be heard saying in the clip. Got that? Are you paying attention, ladies and gentlemen? The seventh person is the shooter, the killer, the murderer. But this person is a victim. And would this person be viewed as a victim if this person was not transgender? Some transgenders are victims, but the victims on this day were the three students and three staff. This is disgusting. And now one that's made a lot of news from the Daily Mail, a first-hand account from Riley Gaines. I'm not going to read all of it. You should go and read this yourselves. But anyway, Riley Gaines is a recent graduate from the University of Kentucky, where she was a 12-time All-American swimmer and a spokeswoman for the Independent Women's Forum. Here are her words. Just over 1 year ago, I wouldn't have imagined that I'd find myself barricaded inside a classroom in a building on the campus of San Francisco State University. Outside the door, a violent racist mob chanted threats against me. Open the door! We want Riley, they screamed. Why are you protecting a white woman? The mob spit at security. This is vengeance. You're protecting a transphobe. A transphobe, yeah, right. What made her a transphobe? Well, let me go on, and I'll explain, or I'll let her explain in her own words, why she's now viewed as a transphobe. How had it come to this? Riley asks. Only moments before I was hurriedly shuffled into a side office, I was standing in front of a crowded room speaking about the disturbing and growing trend of biological males competing in women's sports and attempts by radical activists to gag women who dare to speak out. For nearly a year, I've been traveling from campus to campus sharing my personal story of racing University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas, who was formerly known as Will Thomas. Will Thomas was a mediocre male athlete, but in 2021, after coming out as transgender, Leah Thomas started dominating female competition. In the female category, Thomas defeated Olympians, American record holders, and some of the most impressive women in the sport. Of course, I knew this was wrong, but it wasn't until I competed against Thomas myself that I fully understood the depths of this injustice. I raced against Thomas in March 2022 in the 200 freestyle. We tied. We finished at the exact same moment, down to 100ths of a second. But after we stepped down from the awards podium, an NCAA official looked at both Thomas and me and said, "Great job, you tied, but we don't account for ties, so the trophy goes to Leah." That struck me as strange, so I questioned him. As it turns out, that may have been the first time anyone had ever questioned why Thomas received special treatment, and the official's answer shocked me. He said that Thomas would hold the trophy for picture purposes. That's when I realized that the NCAA no longer valued everything that I, my teammates, and every other girl swimming that day had worked their entire lives to achieve. The goal was no longer excellence in women's sport. The goal was virtue signaling on the backs of women. Unfortunately, it seems that people pushing for trans inclusion in the female sporting category are more interested in silencing and threatening their opponents than in engaging in dialogue. These radical activists would rather bully their way into women's locker rooms and women's competitions than look for a way to create equal opportunities for all. So much for good sportsmanship. I am not afraid to confront bullies, but when I arrived at San Francisco State University, I expected that campus police would be there to ensure my safety. They were nowhere to be found. Nevertheless, the organizers of the speech and I walked to the room, and I proceeded to give my speech to a packed house of supporters, protesters, and the merely curious. The entire time I was speaking, I could hear chanting from outside the window and from the hallway, "Trans women are women, trans liberation, and it's time to fight back." Inside the room, I was heckled, interrupted, and insulted, but while this was disappointing, the protesters were basically peaceful, that is, until the moment my speech ended. After I finished fielding questions, a group from outside the room swarmed in, turned off the lights, and pushed toward me at the front of the room. I was backed up against the podium. I was cornered and increasingly nervous. A man wearing women's clothing intentionally hit me twice. The first blow landed on my shoulder. The second one glanced off my shoulder and hit me in the face. Another woman with my group was also attacked. I later saw a picture of a girl grabbing her by the face. Okay, there's more to the story, and she's not saying, and I'm not saying, and I don't think anybody is saying that all transgenders are violent. I've said this many times on my radio show. The LGBTQ community, I think for the most part, wants to be left alone and live in peace. It's the radical activists we're talking about right now, and to be fair, I don't think they speak for the entire community. I've said that before. I probably can't say that too many times, especially with the way people react today. And let's talk for a moment on how people react, how people might be reacting right now. Because I'll just bet you somebody is listening right now without really listening. Since everything else is redefined today, violence is defined as free speech. Free speech is defined as violence. In the hearts of many, they are not accepting actual words or reflecting on actual words, but rather an emotional reaction to the words. And because they aren't really listening, they think they are hearing some kind of hatred or some kind of call to persecute transgenders. They are not. They are simply hearing that the rights of all people need to be considered, including those who have religious views that differ from the LGBTQ movement, or views on sports that believe it's unfair for a man to enter a woman's sporting event calling himself a woman, all the while holding the advantage of a male body in the competition. And yes, there are some who feel that when six people are shot to death, they are the victims. Not the shooter. The shooter committed an act of evil. Be they gay, be they straight, be they male, female, transgender. When somebody murders, it's murder. And this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Wash your heart.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. It's been a while since we've had columnist Mike Friedenberg on our show, formerly with National Review, and now just recently a columnist for the Epoch Times. And the Epoch Times, in my opinion, is becoming the premier conservative periodical. Mike, congratulations and welcome back to our program.
Well, Bob, thank you for having me. Yeah, the thing I really like about Epoch Times is that it is actually a newspaper. If you read it, you get straight news. They do have opinion columnists, which is what I'm doing. But if you want to get straight news, and the news is so objective that you're going to feel like it's slanted to the right, but the fact is they just basically have real news. So that's the thing that I do.
And National Review was once highly esteemed, but didn't they become just anti-Trump constantly?
National Review has very high standards in terms of the people that write for them. Quality writing. However, I will say that I just could never understand why they came out and attacked Donald Trump in the 2016 election. I mean, that's all I can say about it. I'm not going to say anything more about it. They have many fine writers. They have high standards, but I do not understand their whole position on Trump. I'll leave it at that.
Well, I know the Epoch Times has really made an emergence the last few years.
Yes,
I've been very impressed with them. So congratulations. So. And Mike is also one of the rotating hosts on World News Brief. So congratulations. Yeah. You do a great job there, too.
Well, thank you very much. So, of course, I listened to your monologue, and I will say this. I think this is one of the most important issues of our time. And what you said is true. Certainly not all transgenders are violent. In fact, I'm sure the vast majority are not. However, right now we have something called the transgender movement, transgenderism. It's an ideology. It's unscientific. It's anti-human. It's anti-children, and it's a very destructive ideology. And if you're an adult involved with it, it's not good for you. It's not good for your life. For it to be pushed on children is flat out evil. And I'll just say that flat out. To push this
many
on
many are
children,
just calling it child abuse.
Well, it's child abuse. And we didn't have this before, something that the folks pushing this ideology, this destructive ideology, do not like, but it's true. It has all the signs of being a social contagion, because as you push it down on these, you know, these little kids, helpless kids, hey, little Bobby, you might not be a boy, you might be a Bobberine.
Which would never in a million years have occurred to little Bobby if somebody hadn't said that. It's a little bit different if somebody's a young adult and they want to transcend. I still disagree with them, but that's in a different category. I think we could at least with most people have common ground that this should not be taught to children.
20 years ago, it was less than 1% of the people that dealt with gender dysphoria issues. And then the vast majority, I think it was 80, 90% of the time, by the time they reached young adulthood, they had resolved to their correct gender. In other words, a boy having some issues on it, by the time they reached young adulthood, they would say, oh, I understand a boy. And they go on to lead happy, normal, productive lives. So this is very destructive. And it's the ultimate gaslighting exercise. If they can push this on the American public and to get the American public not to even understand anymore what a man and a woman is, then they can get us to believe anything.
Well, it's an attack on the nuclear family from every angle, and an attempt to just create horrible disunity in our country, and again, like we said, leading to anarchy.
Well, it's an attack on the Imago Dei. It's an attack on the image of God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, so with that said, good monologue. I appreciate it and agree. It was interesting. You talked about being able to predict things based upon your experience there. It reminds me of the series of books by Isaac Asimov, the Foundation Trilogy. Very famous writer.
Science fiction can be very predictive.
Yeah, and he had, and it's one of his characters, I read these probably 30 years ago, but they had Harry Seldon that stood out. He was a psychohistorian. It was in the books. It was a discipline where using mathematics, psychology, and social science, he was able to predict the course of civilization. And even 100 years from the time when he made his predictions were still holding up because he had done the math. But along came this guy called the Mule, and his calculations were built on masses of people, was not able to take into account a highly influential individual, and that messed up his calculation. But that's a whole nother story. But it's just interesting. I do believe that when you take a look at human history, you can make very strong predictions. Like you were saying, you weren't too surprised when your predictions came true.
No, like I said, they were easy predictions to make, except that the people not paying attention to the news will get caught unawares, or not paying attention to human nature.
So that I do want to talk today is about something that it's a lot of people may not be paying as much attention to it as they should be, and that's the Ukraine war. Now, obviously,
I know you've had quite a different take on that.
I do have a take on it, and unless you're happen to be watching Tucker Carlson in a thumbnail, the narrative of the war is NATO, United States, Ukraine, Zelensky, good, Russia, Putin, bad. That's pretty much the narrative, right? I mean, if you read the news, you know, things like that. I mean, I've read every nuance, every story. I mean, it's actually almost funny. Oh, Russians aren't going to win because they're all drinking themselves to death. I mean, literally, there's stories like that. The Russians are so corrupt. But before this war, oh no, the Russian juggernaut. That's what people thought. But once, to be frank, after the initial invasion failed, it did turn out that Putin's intelligence, probably corruption, degraded intelligence, did not tell them the real deal, did not tell them how well-trained their Ukrainian military was, did not tell them their morale. He thought that he could go in there and quickly take over Kiev. And I believe the reason he did this, I've been reading, that he wanted to be in a position to negotiate Ukraine staying neutral. He does not want Ukraine. Ukraine's full of Ukrainian nationalists who don't like Russia. He doesn't really want all of Ukraine. What really started this, if you want to understand, is it goes back to 1991 when we saw the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the negotiations between Gorbachev and the Western powers about reunifying Germany. And as part of the reunification discussions, Baker, Secretary of State Baker, said, yeah, you agree and you support reunifying Germany and NATO will not expand toward Russia. We're going to leave you alone. We're not going to do that. And also Helmut Kohl, the German chancellor, said the same thing. Gorbachev in his memoirs said that's one of the reasons he agreed to be on board with reunifying Germany. And lo and behold, they reunified Germany, and then immediately NATO starts expanding. Now, purposes of NATO, NATO was formed in 1949. The express purpose was to actually contain the Soviet Union. That was the purpose of NATO. So with the dissolution of the Soviet Union, you know, you have Russia, and NATO, you know, has won the war, you know, and I think it was Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and Helmut Kohl together, that triangle there, that just forced Russia to realize they couldn't outspend the United States. But at the time, by the way, at the time in 1989, the second largest economy in the world was the Soviet Union. They had 280 million people. We had 230 million people. They had 40,000 tanks. They had twice as many nuclear weapons as we had. I mean, it was a juggernaut. Now you have the dissolution of the Soviet Union. The GDP drops by 50%. Their military crumbles and falls apart. And during that 10 to 12 year period, all NATO does is keep adding on new NATO countries. So 17 countries in 1991, today 31 countries. And all the time Russia's saying, hey, we don't believe NATO's a harmless, wonderful, peace-loving organization. We see NATO and the United States being involved with wars all over the world, dumping millions of pounds of bombs. We don't want to have a 1,200-mile border with NATO troops poised on that border and weapons and missiles placed into Ukraine. We don't want that. We want Ukraine to stay neutral. Now, that's something that's been going on, okay? So to say that Russia was not provoked is ridiculous, okay? So, but that's only part of the equation. The other part of the equation is understanding a little bit about Ukraine. You've got Eastern Ukraine, which is heavily Russian. And in the last few election cycles that were actually real, genuine elections, particularly 2010, these were internationally monitored elections. They had the international monitors come in, which you call the pro-Russian party candidate won, like 48% to 45%. And then you had the nationalist candidate. The two parties, by the way, these are important names. One is the Party of Regions. That was the pro-Russian candidate. And basically their thing is, hey, we want to maintain our individual Russian culture. We want to be able to speak language in our provinces and areas. And then you have the Ukrainian nationalist says, no, you're going to speak the Ukrainian languages. And there's been a lot of persecution of the Russian ethnic Russians by the Ukrainian nationalists over the years. And I should remember that Ukraine was one of the countries that most completely collaborated with the Nazis on the Final Solution. They were, you know, running the executions of the Jews in the country. So you have this ongoing conflict going on there. And along comes 2014 and this duly elected president, Viktor Kryashenko, I'd have his name here, but he is pushed out with a violent revolution. It's a coup, a violent coup supported by the United States and CIA. This is very well acknowledged. You have lots of sources. You actually have voice transcripts of U.S. operatives in there talking about the elections and how they're going to organize things and stuff like that. So here's the democratically elected pro-Russian candidate who had barely won, but he had won, and he's tossed out. He has to flee the country because where the seat of power, Kiev, is surrounded, that's the Ukrainian nationalist part of the country. If he had stayed there, he didn't have the base there. The eastern part of the country is where the Russians are. It's, you know, about a third of the country. So he flees the country, and that's in February of 2014. Then by May of 2014, they hold what's called rump elections, and they put in a Ukrainian nationalist candidate. And the folks from eastern Ukraine don't get to vote in this election cycle. So they're completely disenfranchised. And Crimea says, enough is enough. After they tossed out their candidate that they had supported, worked to get anything, they said, hey, we've been Russian for most of our history. Crimea was part of Russia for 200 years. Then under the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union said, hey, Ukraine, you could administer Crimea because you've done a good job being a member of the Soviet Union. So for 50 years, a heavily Russian part of the world was under the administration of Ukraine. But after the violent overthrow of the pro-Russian candidate, they said, forget it. And Russia went in there and they said, yeah, we want to be part of Russia. So this idea that of liberating Crimea does not want to be liberated. They want to be part of Russia. Now, here's the other aspect here, is that the thing that precipitated the riots and the violence against the pro-Russian president, the democratically elected, remember, he was democratically elected, verified and validated by international observers, is that he wanted to accept the aid deal from Russia. Russia was going to give him $15 billion, no strings attached, and 33% off on natural gas and oil. And the NATO deal was, hey, we're going to put in stringency measures. NATO, to be fair, they wanted them to put in stringency measures and other measures to get rid of the corruption, but there was no definitive aid. The deal looked much better to come from the Russians. And when he said he was going to go with the Russian deal, that was the final straw. And then the pro-NATO forces rose up and they tossed him out. So when you're talking about democracy, there hasn't been democracy, really genuine democracy in Ukraine, and it's since at least 2014. And as you've been following, Zelensky has shut down. There's no freedom of the press. He's gotten rid of every opposing party. There's no elections. So it is really strictly an authoritarian government. So we're not talking about defending democracy here. So that is the situation. Then you have the Donbas region, which is Luhansk and Donetsk regions. These are the regions that, you know, shortly into 2014, they said, hey, we've had enough of this Ukrainian nationalist stuff. By the way, the Ukrainian Nationalist Party is called the Fatherland Party.
Which reminds us a lot of the Nazis.
Well, and it should, because
that's what Hitler called it, the Fatherland.
The shock troops, the ones that were at the forefront of this violent revolution, was called the Azov Brigade. And they are flat out neo-Nazis. They recruited from around the world. Within 2 years previous to that 2014 revolution where they overthrew the Juliet government, they had been talking about, you know, eliminating all the Jews. So this is the things you're not hearing now. And this is, as I said, you can find this in The Guardian. You can find this in lots of Western media sources. However, if you just read Fox News or you just read CNBC or, you know, and as I said, with an exception, maybe Tucker Carlson, you know, he has had obviously not been too happy with the situation there.
And you're not calling Russia virtuous. You're just trying to show people.
No, there's
and
another side to this.
Meanwhile, there's another country called China that seems to be taking over the entire world,
and we're bogged down over here. Yeah, so we're looking at Russia that is Russia is still a military power, but it's a pale shadow of what it was when it was the Soviet Union. We're not
China is the concern now.
China
is,
more powerful than the Soviet Union was at its height. So you've got Russia with an economy of $1.7 trillion. Our economy is $23 trillion. China's economy is $17 trillion. You know, NATO's economy is, I think, $35 trillion. I mean, so it's this, the threat is overblown. We'll continue when we get back.
Okay, my guest is Mike Friedenberg with the Epoch Times. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show with Mike Friedenberg.
So back up a second here. The thing that I really saddens me about this whole situation is if you read the reports from the Western media, they'll document, you know, and I don't know how accurate these are, but they'll say, you know, today 200 Russian troops were eliminated, along with 10 armored personnel vehicles, 3 tanks, and 3 artillery systems. Then you go find non-Western sources, and they'll say, today 150 Ukrainian soldiers were eliminated today. Eliminated means killed, Bob. And 20 armored personnel vehicles killed, and we took out 3 artillery systems, and you go back and read these reports. Every day, hundreds of young men are dying in this battle. And sadly, I think that we have this holdover from the Cold War where we have people on the, you know, more conservative side, you know, people like Ted Cruz, people like that, that are, you know, still thinking of Russia as the Soviet Union. Russia is not the Soviet Union. You know, Russia is far from perfect. It's, you know, they were listed one of the top 2 corrupt countries in Europe in terms of the government, you know, corruption, payola, things like that. You know, the other top 2 country was Ukraine. And speaking of that, you may recall that, you know, Zelensky dismissed 10 of his highest advisors and members of his government over corruption. Well, what they don't know is that Zelensky was part of that corruption as well. He's skimming off the top. $400 million of aid from the United States has been skimmed. And there was another...
And the Bidens are part of that corruption.
Right. So we sit there. So, but the bottom line is every day, hundreds of young men are dying on these lines. And also civilians, too. There's civilians there. And by the way, that's another lie. Okay, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Russia has been attacking civilian infrastructure targets like the power grid targets. By the way, we attacked the power grid when we went into Iraq. So talk of Putin being a war criminal. I'm a little bit worried about that, because if you were to apply the standards that they're trying to apply to Putin, you could start, you know, saying a lot of things about the United States has done in other regimes throughout the world and things like that. So, but let's get back here to the point of is, so we have this ongoing slaughter taking place. It's brutal. This is high intensity conflict. We're talking artillery battles like we have not seen since World War I, World War II, even. So massed artillery striking in and killing people from, you know, 15, 20 miles away, back and forth. Now, right now, Russia, though, has a massive advantage in artillery. So while the Western media is saying, you know, Russia's been the one taking the casualties, I'm reading reports from non-Western side that it says it's exactly inverted. That, you know, for every Russian that dies, 7 Ukrainians are dying. Whereas the Western media is saying, now, is it somewhere in between? Probably. But the thing is in a year from now, there's no way, if you look at the military equation, that Ukraine can win this war. So a year from now, and tens of thousands of deaths, 20, 30, 40,000 deaths, we could be back, we could be in the exact same situation that we are today, which is basically we have to negotiate with Russia and the war. And Russia's going to sit there and say, this is another interesting fact, is that the thing that precipitated Russia, that forced Russia to go into Ukraine, was that after the violent overthrow of the pro-Russian government, you know, Democratic-elected government in 2014, the United States and the other NATO countries started training and building up Ukraine's military. So as of late January, early February, there was 120,000 well-trained Ukrainian troops on the borders of Donetsk and Luhansk, DPR and LPR. So the Donetsk Republic and the Luhansk Republic, they're basically facing 40,000 troops on their side, the separatists, ready to come in and take out, forcibly repatriate eastern Ukraine. And Russia said, no, this is a Russian culture folks here. We don't want this to happen. Now, that's what they say. That's what Russia says. That's what Putin says. They says that was what precipitated their invasion. Was Putin's thinking, hey, this is a good excuse to do it? You know, maybe some cynicism in there. Hey, here's a good excuse because I really wanted this region anyway. And now Ukraine and NATO has set it up to make it a good excuse. Hey, possibly. I don't know what's in Putin's mind, but that is the situation. There was 120,000 troops right on the border ready to forcibly force folks who did not want to be part of the Ukraine to be back and part of the Ukraine. That goes to the thing is that we forget. There was a civil war going on, a civil war in Ukraine. It was Eastern Ukrainians, Russian culture, Russian ethnicity, Russian language, revolting against Ukraine. And that's what we got involved with in NATO. That's what we've spent over $100 billion on, trying to force to give Ukraine the firepower to forcibly resolve this. Now, of course, the Eastern Ukrainians, the Russian culture Ukrainians, or they're probably not calling themselves more, were being supported by the Russians. Yeah, so the Russians, who have a 1,200-mile border with Ukraine, are involved with this, Bob. Isn't that crazy? A 1,200-mile border, and they want to be involved with what's happening on the 1,200 miles of the border. Let's ask a question here. Let's say, hypothetically, Russia were to go and said, hey, we're going to install nuclear missiles into Cuba. You know what? Do you think the United States would like that? Or what would you think if Russia decided to install missiles into Cuba.
We already know how we felt about
that. Well, how will we know that, Bob?
Because that happened.
Oh, what if China said, hey, you know what? We're forming a new military security coalition, and Mexico's joining it. And we're going to base 50, 60,000 Chinese troops on the Mexican border. And we're going to put in a whole bunch of nuclear missiles right on that border there. How do you think we would sit there and take it quietly?
Well, who knows what the Biden administration would do. But if you mean what a sane administration would do, no, of course they
okay.
wouldn't.
Okay. So I'm just saying now, I'm just trying to say things from another perspective. Because I will tell you, a year ago, my perspective was, hey, Russia bad, Putin bad. A year ago, I was thinking this, and it's been like, oh, wow, I didn't realize the fact that it's a civil war, that we're getting involved with a civil war.
So behind the curtains, what do you think is the real agenda of our nation and NATO getting behind this?
You know, it is weird.
Somebody's getting something out of this.
Well, first of all, there's a select group of Ukrainians that are getting wealthy right now. There's no doubt about that. That's happening there. Our arms companies in the United States, we're expending billions and billions of dollars. We've sent over billions of dollars.
So it's similar to the way so many of our companies and politicians are beholding to China. There's a lot of beholding in the Ukraine as well.
That's a known equation. We do know that the Biden family is involved.
The whole Hunter scandal.
We're involved with corrupting. So there also could be the aspect that the folks there that are in power basically said, hey, Biden, we expect support otherwise here. So what I want people to understand is that there is more than, okay, let's just ask a question here. We're getting our information from Western media and Western intelligence sources. Over the last 6 or 7 years, Bob, has Western media and the Western intelligence been confidence-inspiring to you?
Not in the slightest.
Okay, so this is the same groups of people that are telling us what we're supposed to believe about this whole conflict. And I'm going to say is the same people that lied to us about everything about COVID-19.
We should smell a rat based on the source no matter what.
Right, I mean, and Putin's not a crazy man. He's not a sociopath. Is he ruthless? Yes. Is he competent? Yes, he's a competent guy. You don't rise to the top, you know, don't become a top guy in the KGB and don't rise to the top in the dog eat world of the Russian politics without being a tough and ruthless guy. He is. At the same time, he has also led reforms in Russia to reinstate Christianity in the church there. Now, not perfect because he's favored the Russian Orthodox Church. However, evangelical churches can and do exist in Russia. They are allowed
to exist.
Which
is something they weren't allowed to during the Soviet Union's reign.
You know, why we are doing this, it's still a mystery. I just think that there was, okay, you had a huge intelligence apparatus that was fighting the Soviet KGB. You had the State Department, you had the CIA, you had thousands and billions of dollars being spent, and then the Soviet Union collapses. And then you have this huge intelligence apparatus saying, what are we going to do here? What's our purpose?
So you think they still want to associate Russia with the Soviet Union, like kind of a projection?
All I'll say is Russia is not one-tenth the threat that China is. I believe that Russia really wanted Ukraine to stay neutral. Russia doesn't want to become part of Russia, because then if you have Ukraine part of Russia, then it's still going to be right up against NATO countries. Russia wanted to have that. And I feel very sad for the Ukrainian people because they're stuck in the middle. It was NATO and the United States that pushed them into this war. And they do believe they're fighting a fight for their existence as a country, an existential fight. However, when you do surveys of Russian citizens, they believe they're in a fight for the existence of Russia. But right now, the people paying the biggest price are the Ukrainian people. I mean, their country is being devastated. 8 million Ukrainians have fled out of 40 million, something like that. Their infrastructure has been destroyed. I mean, one of the things Russia is doing is they say, hey, we know we're going to have to be fighting in these cities to get what we want, to build up a buffer against NATO. And so they will take out the civilian infrastructure. And when they do that, there are some civilian casualties. They'll take out the power grid and things like that. Basically, the goal is to make the city uninhabitable so that citizens will leave. So when they're fighting there, there'll be less casualties. That's been the goal. But remember, even as this war has been going on, the Ukrainian military has been lobbing artillery shots into Donetsk, into civilian areas. And in the period between 2014 and 2022, February, some 14,000 people were killed in fighting between the Ukrainian military forces, the armed forces of Ukraine, and the Donetsk separatists. And a lot of those casualties were civilians. So civilians are dying on both sides. It's not just Russia where civilians are dying. Ukrainian military forces are killing Russians as well. And the Azov Brigade, which was the neo-Nazi, was known for immense brutality and atrocities. But the United States did not want to look at it. NATO did not want to look at it. And a lot of the international community, which is heavily influenced, did not want to look at that. So it's the point of this whole thing is that we need to get to the negotiating table. because I don't see militarily there's any chance Ukraine can win. I believe that Ukraine is in a much worse state militarily than what the Western media has been saying. And those documents that were released, by the way, Bomb, they basically indicate that. They indicate that the Ukraine's military is much worse off than what the Biden administration and other sources have been telling us. So let's negotiate. Let's not force people who don't want to be part of Ukraine to be part of Ukraine. And let's stop the killing.
And as far as our own national interests, there seem to be far more important things, like I can think of about 20 right now that are just threatening the survival of our country.
Well,
and
we're
all
internally
bogged down and putting all of our eggs in this basket.
Our border is 1,000 times more of a threat to our country than Ukraine. Ukraine is not a national interest.
And we have a weaponized FBI. And China is reaching across and shaking hands with Russia and Saudi Arabia and Iran. Talk about an axis of evil. I think they're even pulling North Korea in.
And I will argue this is Russia has always had a very uneasy relationship with China. China has always had an uneasy relationship with Russia. So what we did is we forced, uniting over the weakling president we have,
fact that they can do any darn thing they want right now.
This policy has, when Trump tried to start working to create more positive relationships with Russia, he was destroyed and shot down.
Well, because he walked into the narrative they wanted to paint for him.
Right. Well, but the thing is that also anything that he did, I mean, and think about it, over the period of time of Trump's presidency, who was demonized during that period of time? Who was demonized? The Russians and Putin, right?
Right. And that could be a holdover right now because of Trump's association with Russia. It's like, oh, Russia's the bad guys. That makes Trump the bad guy.
That is a part of it.
And yet look at the alliances that China has right now.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And isn't China getting ready to just take over Taiwan,
well,
too?
Well, they could be. And I'll say this, is there's some folks that are just saying that they are lumping the China threat and the Russia threat together. I don't agree with them. I think that you can sit there and say Russia is a legitimate threat, but it's a small threat compared to China. And Russia, if it does take Ukraine, it's not going to attack a NATO country. And it's not going to be on our doorstep.
But on the other hand, if Russia and China unite, I still see China as the primary threat. But if Russia just gets under the umbrella of China, we've got real trouble on our hands.
Well, that puts a very strong
block together. Saudi Arabia is now making deals with Hamas and selling Israel up the river. Yeah. A lot of the peace negotiations that Trump had done in the Middle East.
So Putin's not a nice guy. I'm not saying that he is, but there is more to this story than what you've been told. And NATO and the United States did provoke this. They set up the conditions that created the war. They absolutely did set up the conditions that created the war. And yeah, we have lots of defense companies making lots of money on this war. And I also think I don't trust Biden's motives on this war, because I do think it's very possible that they have blackmail material on Biden.
Probably they do. Well, Mike, as always, you bring a very unique perspective from the news. We hope you'll come back and join us again really soon. This is Bob Siegel and Mike Friedenberg making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.